Thank you to tuning in to this very special production of A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And today we're doing things a little differently. Instead of opening up to phone calls, we're going to do just an in-studio conversation with my wonderful guest today. And so you'll have an opportunity to hear more in depth the ideas of my guest. And if you'd like to be part of the conversation afterwards, you can always join us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Go to our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can also find previous shows and podcast form at kcbx.org. Or I post shows at thereluctanttherapist.com. But either way, we love to hear from you and your feedback. And you can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And here we are. We gather each week to talk about those things that go on in our lives, the struggles, the challenges, the heartaches, the victories, our concerns. Because in supporting each other and sharing our stories and sharing those things that go on in our lives, we have the opportunity to make this journey a little less complex or a little less isolated. That we find that the more we work in community, the stronger our self becomes and the stronger we feel in our connections to others. So thank you for tuning in today. And thank you for being part of this conversation that I've been looking forward to, well, probably since 1990 when I first read Goddesses in Every Woman. And I was a new mom with a four-year-old, married, had a house and a car, graduated from college, and all of a sudden was thinking, gosh, I wonder what I'm supposed to do now. I mean, I understand that I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. I had really felt passionate about that. But that's a lot of time to be staying at home. And so I came upon this book written by Jean Shinoda Bolen. And it changed the way I saw my life. It changed the way I saw life in general. And if you haven't had an opportunity to read this book, I recommend it. And another book, Gods in Every Man, for men and women to understand how mythology comes alive in our everyday life. And so having read this book, I started on this new journey that led me to going to Pacifica Graduate Institute and continuing on to become a licensed marriage and family therapist, and then ending up at Cal Poly lecturing. And then here I am today on KCBX getting to talk to you. And it all started from this nugget of this one book that changed the way I viewed my opportunities and just life in general. And so 20-something years later, my youngest has graduated from high school in June, and I'm wondering, now what do I do? What's next? And Dr. Jean Shinoda Bolen happens to be doing a workshop at Pacifica Graduate Institute, my alma mater, in July. And so I had the opportunity to go to the workshop and spend the weekend with Dr. Bolen and listen to her beautiful stories and bringing to life the mythology, the gods and goddesses, and talking about her new book. And during the course of the weekend, I felt confident enough to walk over while we were putting our dishes away after breakfast and introduced myself and told her all the ways that I loved her, which I'm sure she hears a lot, and then asked her if she'd be a guest on our show. And fortunately for me, Dr. Jean Shinoda Bolen has agreed to be a guest on my show today, and she is my special guest. Welcome, Dr. Bolen.
Well, thank you very much. I'm touched by your introduction.
Oh, well, it's been a long time in coming to be able to have a conversation with you about. I have so many things to talk about, but I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. And for people who aren't familiar with you or your work, I'd like to introduce you a little bit more. Jean Shinoda Bolen is an MD, a Jungian analyst, psychiatrist, author, and activist. She was a clinical professor of psychiatry at UCSF Medical Center and is a distinguished life fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. She is the author of Close to the Bone, Life-Threatening Illness as a Soul Journey, Goddesses in Every Woman, Gods in Every Man, and Like a Tree, How Trees, Women, and Tree People Can Save the Planet. And her new book is Artemis, The Indomitable Spirit in Every Woman. Artemis, the Greek goddess of the hunt and moon, is the archetype of the environmentalist, animal rights activist, and feminist. Jean is an advocate at the United Nations for a fifth world conference on women, we'll call it 5WCW, and she's a former board member of the Ms. Foundation for Women. And her website is jeanbolen.com. So, Jean, welcome to the show.
A delight.
So I'd like to start off because as you and I talked earlier, having been a graduate of Pacifica Graduate Institute, with which works in the world of depth psychology and mythology and Greek mythology, you and I kind of speak that language as if these are our friends and neighbors, the gods and goddesses. And I don't know if everyone speaks that same language. So I'm wondering if we could start off just talking about how, as a psychiatrist, you also came to work in the realm of mythology and how the two go together.
Well, for one thing, speaking about the gods and goddesses as next-door neighbors is very easy to do because they are embodied by my next-door neighbors. And so, yes, they are patterns in all of us, and when a particular pattern is a dominant one, it is like living next door to that person that resembles that particular god or goddess. And it also fits into clinical psychiatry when the shadow side or the negative side of a particular god-goddess seems to take over the person, and she, say, behaves in a way that's not herself, but like the negative part of the goddess. And actually, that's one of the ways in which I got into writing Goddesses in Every Woman. I had been teaching using two myths that happened to have as their major goddess either Aphrodite or Artemis, and then I started to wonder, well, what about the other goddesses? I mean, the Greek mythology has stayed alive in our psyches for, well, not forever, but forever since they emerged into the Western mind, and they really are patterns that we recognize. I'm thinking, well, what about the other goddesses? And into my office comes a woman who called me from the past, because we had done some work together, and then she went off to graduate school, and I didn't know that I'd see her again, but she called and said, I really need to come back. I am becoming somebody I don't even like. And what happened is she got taken over by what is very recognizable in mythology as a jealous aspect of the goddess Hera. Now, Hera is a goddess of marriage, and the positive side is that if all is well, then marriage is a depth experience and a sacred one for her. And it's part of what gives her life meaning. And that's one of the deeper meanings of all these archetypes, is that if you live from an archetypal depth, your life is meaningful to you. You may have what someone says is just a role, but that role is not just something you're doing to be acceptable in the outer world. It corresponds with something very deep in yourself. So here's the goddess of marriage, and here she is learning that her husband is having an affair, and she's not besides which she's pregnant at the time. So she's pregnant, and her husband is having an affair, and of course she'd be deeply wounded, but because Hera was an archetype, what happened is she lived out the myth. She became enraged at the other woman. She just was possessed. She knew better. I mean, she knew this is not her to be so enraged and jealous and vengeful and all the plotting that was going on in her mind. And really, she didn't like who she had become. Well, it was like having Hera walk into my office. And one of the things about Hera, the goddess and the archetype, is instead of getting depressed, she's likely to get enraged. And instead of looking at her husband and realizing that he is the one who has been unfaithful, he is the one who has broken the trust that she had, she focuses it, like the goddess did, on the other woman. And in Greek mythology, Hera devastated islands, people, everything in her rage. But this is a human woman in whom the shadow side of Hera was taking over. And also watching what was going on as an inner drama was a very concerned observing ego who couldn't stop it at that moment, but in the therapy of looking at, first of all, having her observe that really the issue is with her husband. It isn't with this other woman. And as we got into that and her energy shifted there and she realized that what they needed to do was be in couple therapy and she needed to also do work psychologically, which she did. And she got freed of that particular, you might even call it a possession by the goddess. So yes, Hera can live next door.
So when we talk about the gods and goddesses in Greek mythology or mythology in general, as it relates to psychology, what you're saying is that these archetypes, these gods and goddesses, these personality traits that are embodied by the gods and goddesses, we see in modern day men and women.
We certainly do.
And how we as individuals incorporate the different personality traits of these different gods and goddesses will impact the quality of our lives, or knowing which gods and goddesses we are embodying can impact the quality of our life. Am I saying that correctly?
You're right on. It's sort of like we have sort of built into us, like we have talents. They're human archetypes. They're human talents. They're human abilities in which we all have, you know, access to some of them. But there are musical geniuses and there are tin-eared folks. There are coordinated people and uncoordinated people. And then there are magnificent athletes that have an amazing coordination. And intellect is like that, and feelings are like that. It's within the range of all of us. But if you live out your talent, if you live from an archetypal part of yourself, then there is a joy at being yourself. The Jungian point of view says we should become who we are. We should become authentic. We should individuate. We should grow into whole people. And a lot of that has to do with knowing what archetypes are in us and that we live from inside out, from the archetype within. Because if you do that, rather than live out a role for other people, then one, it is a deep part of yourself that there's a joy at learning something that is innate in yourself. I mean, actually, it's true from the time we're very little that if children are left to be themselves, then often they gravitate to like someone with a natural talent for music. You put that kid by a piano and he starts to play or she starts to play on it. And there's a joy. There's a joy in the child who learns how to read when the intellectual side, the visual intellectual side, is just a gift. And so the delight at becoming is part of living from an archetype. So when I write about Artemis as the archetype whose time has come, actually, because Artemis, the archetype, got liberated by the women's movement. Mm-hmm. Women before the women's movement were expected to live out Hera, the goddess of the archetype and goddess of marriage, Demeter, the archetype of the mother, and if you were able to do that, because they were deeply you, then it was a great time to be a maternal woman, for example. And at the end of the period after World War II, there was a time when American women, the birth weight of American women, rivaled India's for the first and only time. And if you were a Demeter who naturally wanted to have children, the more the merrier, and your culture said, that's just great, then you often found that you came into the world as a not as a single child, a one and only, which is sort of what's happening now, but you may have had four siblings or five siblings or at least three. Mm-hmm. Two was not the ideal for a certain period of time, especially if you were the mother archetype. Now, if you had no birth control, and if you were an Artemis or Athena that has goals and an intellect, and you had to have six children, you then were fulfilling your role, but it wasn't a natural gift and it wasn't a natural joy for you. And so we had the beginning of the women's movement with a book called The Feminine Mystique, in which Betty Friedan pointed out the problem with no name. It's as if you live through others, from the point of that book was, if you live through others, that is, you lived as the wife of or the mother of, and had no life that was your own, you got depressed. Well, women for whom other archetypes, other than mother and wife, were strong, were those women who were not happy with their lot, even though they had everything that they were supposed to have to make them happy. But they weren't happy because they weren't growing into who they could be, really.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, joined in the studio today by my guest, Jean Shinoda Bolen, MD, author of many books, including her latest, Artemis, The Indomitable Spirit in Every Woman. And we're doing things a little differently today. We're not taking calls. We're just going to have a conversation. But you are welcome to continue with the conversation on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or on our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can find more about Dr. Bolen at her website, jeanbolen.com. And Jean, so let's talk about the goddess whose time has come, Artemis, and that we've, you know, got to a place now where there's opportunities for women to express themselves in all the archetypes of the goddesses. But let's talk about Artemis and your inspiration for your own activism.
Well, Artemis is the goddess of the hunt and goddess of the moon. And that makes her a very interesting combination of focus in the outer world and capacity to reflect or be mystical in the inner world. In the outer world, she is goddess of the hunt. She's a goddess that you see with a bow and arrow, meaning you can focus on a target of your own choosing, aim for it, and go for it, so to speak. So that you naturally have an innate ability to focus, which not all women have. But the women who have a particular quality, such as Artemis or Athena, are able to focus. And it makes it easier to, say, aim for a target like going to medical school or being an activist or achieving something. It's a natural competitor quality, too. And it's fascinating to me how the stories of the goddess, of any of the goddesses, reflect the qualities of the archetype. So Artemis is, when I say liberated by the women's movement, for one thing, Artemis is very comfortable with men as equals, as brothers, as competitors. And when she was born, she was the firstborn of twins. So her brother Apollo is a natural brother and competitor. He with his golden bow and arrow, her with her silver bow and arrow. And they were competitive, and they also were brother-sisterly. And so an egalitarian woman doesn't want to be dominated by, me, Jane, you, Tarzan kind of a hierarchical relationship. She naturally is comfortable with equality. Well, that's a feminist perspective.
Which is a hard thing right now, because as an instructor at Cal Poly, when I ask how many of you are feminists, very few young women raise their hands anymore. So just the term feminist, I think, is difficult for women even today to say it out loud.
Unfortunately, what happens in the culture that really is misogynist, has a sense of hierarchy, is kind of based on a male superior model, which a patriarchy is. Any word that implies an empowered woman turns negative. So feminist was one of those words, because basically it just means equal, a belief in the equality between men and women. I mean, basically that's a very simple definition of it. and all those women in your classes had this, the training and the instinct and the self-esteem to figure that they could be in that class equal to the men in it, and they are. But they're reluctant to say, I feel like an equal. Well, they may say that, but they don't say, I'm a feminist.
No.
And I'm thinking of another word. I mean, I've also written about women in the third phase of life, and the third phase of life based on the whole schema of maiden, mother, crone, mm-hmm. Are reflections of a time prior to monotheism and prior to patriarchy when divinity was seen as the great mother, or sometimes reflect the reflection of her is seen as the moon, that the moon has a waxing crescent, it becomes full, and then it becomes waning, and then it goes into the dark of the moon. And those are like the phases of a woman's life in many ways, that Artemis is a young moon. She was the goddess of the moon, but specifically of the crescent moon as it was growing towards the full moon, and then the full moon is usually the mother or the full woman, and then the third phase is that of the waxing moon or crone. Well, crone is hardly a word that has, I mean, I'm trying to redeem it because I've put the word juicy in front of crone.
Nice.
Because it was important to try to describe the third phase of a woman's life. Mm-hmm. And in Goddess is an Older Woman, I was describing the third phase of women's lives as, and the goddesses that are specific for these phases. And the problem was that there isn't a good word for an older woman. And I had a choice between basically two words, crone or hag. Crone was redeemable. And hag, that had its roots in hagiography, same roots as hagiography, which is the study of saints. So once when an older woman was either considered wise and a wise crone, or as a saintly older woman, powerful words like feminist became dirty words or negative words or I'm not like one of them. And that's a shame. I do want women to claim I am a feminist. For many reasons. One, it's to appreciate those women who got us the right to vote, mm-hmm. and who were ridiculed back then and defamed and even imprisoned and force-fed because they marched for women's rights to vote. And then there was when the second round of feminism came, there was the making fun of bra burners and Ms. Magazine comes out and a whole generation actually grew themselves and grew a movement and changed the world for us. It was just through consciousness-raising groups that women began to think about how it wasn't just their individual story, but because they are women, that certain things happen that they blame themselves for. And this is about consciousness raising, and this is about sharing the knowledge, and this is about empowering each other to do whatever it was that each woman in the consciousness raising group on her own decided that was important for her to do. It was an amazing movement that was, it had spokespeople, it spokeswomen, but it was leaderless.
Well, and it seems that time has come again within the stories you're telling in Artemis, your new book, Artemis, the Indomitable Spirit in Every Woman. And if you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, joined today in the studio by Jean Shinoda-Bolan, Dr. Jean Shinoda-Bolan, author, Jungian analyst, psychiatrist, and activist. And she is on the show today talking about the changing of the assignment for Western women and how we need to come together again in this consciousness raising. And it is our time as women and as men to come together and join to change the future of this planet. And so I'm curious because so many, what I talked about earlier is that I had the privilege of spending the weekend with you in July at a workshop at Pacifica. And some things that came up that just kept resonating for me was the idea of our assignment, that as women, when we finish a role or transition from one role to another, that we have to be open to our next assignment. And can you talk a little bit about that and how you found your new assignment as an activist with this book?
Well, assignment is a way of describing living your personal myth. If I were Joseph Campbell, I might be saying, speaking in that particular term, or the Jungian word is individuation. But to break down into the choices that we have at certain phases of our lives, I like to think of it more as an assignment whose time has come inside of us. Mm-hmm. So how do you recognize an assignment when one comes along? They're all inner responses. Other people may think that there's a great cause that you should be part of, but maybe it doesn't ring true for you. Maybe it's not your assignment. The idea of an assignment is, one, it's meaningful to you. All kinds of good causes exist. You might be the person in the family who needs to change a family dynamic. Maybe that's your assignment. Or maybe, like mine, it is to create a, help bring a world conference on women into being and affect a global change through it, possibly. It's a huge range, and the range is, what does it mean to you? And it will mean something. You know it. So, one, it's meaningful. Two, it will be fun. It will be hard, probably, if it's a big one, a big assignment, or whatever it is. But it will be fun if you do it with others who share your values. And it will be fun if it uses you. If this whole idea that if you can grow into who it is that wants to grow inside of you. As you grow, it's fun. If it uses who you have been up to this point so that you've developed talents and now you can use them and you can put them to good use, that's fun. And last, is it motivated by love? If it's motivated by love, then when you get a setback, It's not an ego power thing you're in. It's like you're there for the long haul. It's like some principle, and this is why I say you could be a activist, animal rights activist, environmentalist. It's something you love that is being trashed or vulnerable, and you want to look after it because you love it. And so it's motivated by love. You may be enraged because you get enraged when bad things happen to vulnerable people. And if that is so, then you are also expressing the Artemis archetype, whose major symbol is the protective mother bear. And way back in ancient Greece, the Arctoi, the word for that means little bears, it's sort of like the brownies, I think, she was the goddess who protected young pre-pubescent girls. When they were under her protection for that year, they were free to play like tomboys. They were free to be out of doors. They were not expected to, they were free from early marriage, essentially, because girls were married off young, and as they still are in lots of the world. And if you were under Artemis protection, at least for a year, you could still be yourself before you needed to be married off. So mother bears get angry. You don't mess with mother bear. Mm-mm. And so it can often appear that an activist is enraged and angry, but I still maintain that only when the underlying cause is about something you love will you be able to stay the course, because you cannot keep on being an activist based on just being hostile and angry towards anybody. But you certainly can be enraged. But you also could do better just persevering, knowing that the rage touched your heart. I mean, it's like it hurts. It makes you angry that the trees are being cut down, or that species are disappearing from this earth, or that in so many ways there's so many things to love and be concerned about saving. And an activist who is in the Artemis mode joins forces with others to save what matters.
Finding that passion. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, joined in the studio today by Dr. Jean Shinoda-Bolan, who's talking to us about many things. I have so many things I want to talk to her about, but the world of the gods and goddesses and mythology, and how we find those archetypes in our modern lives, and how we can embody the stories and the spirit of these gods and goddesses in our own lives, and how today we're being called on in different assignments. And when we get back, we're going to talk some more about her latest book, Artemis, the indomitable spirit in every woman, and her passion for forming a UN-sponsored Fifth World Conference on Women. And we'll be right back to continue our conversation. Five years ago, I came upon a book, Goddesses in Every Woman, A New Psychology of Women, written by Jean Shinoda-Bolan, MD. And it changed the direction of my life. It changed the way I thought about life. I started attending goddess circles in our area and getting to know other women who were on this kind of similar journey of understanding feminine psychology and the power of the goddess energy in our lives. And it led me to go to Pacifica Graduate Institute with a focus on depth psychology and the mythology brought to life by Joseph Campbell. And my whole world spun upside down, and I now spend a lot of time thinking about life in the more mystical, or from the view of the gods and goddesses in our lives. And so it is my pleasure today to have Dr. Jean Shinoda-Bolan on the show, talking about the roles of women in our society, and her new book, Artemis, The Indomitable Spirit in Every Woman. And Jean, I don't want to go off too far in a tangent without talking about the UN-sponsored Fifth World Conference on Women, which I think is what kind of inspired your next assignment as activist. Am I correct?
It did. I had no idea that this is what I would end up doing when I wrote a little book called The Mayan Circle.
Yes.
How to Change Ourselves and the World. And it was really about women's circles with a spiritual center. And it did draw from Goddesses in Every Woman, which, by the way, has come out as a 30th anniversary edition just in July. And she has a lovely book jacket on.
I'm looking at my lovelorn pink copy that she signed for me in July that I would never give up, but I do have the new version also. And I highly recommend it as a starting point for understanding this way of viewing the world.
Well, there's one goddess in there, Hestia, the goddess of the hearth and temple, and she did not have a persona, and she's not an in-the-world image, but she is present in the fire at the center of a round hearth. And it was her fire that brought light and warmth to the house that now could become a home, or the building that could now become a temple. And once you take the basic idea of a circle and you put a center in it that is spiritual, that is felt, that is not a dogma or a particular image, but it is a felt center that corresponds to that spiritual center that actually is in all of us. And you have a circle of women, because women do circles much more naturally for a lot of reasons, even hormonal and neural science would point in that direction, that we have an affinity for circle. So I wrote this book, The Man's Circle, How to Change Ourselves and the World. It's a little book. It went out into the world. It was found, developed. Women picked it up. Some did at a conference in South Africa. And some in a series of steps, I heard that there was now a group of women who wanted to get together to form a organization, and they wanted to use the Millionth Circle, and could they use the name, and could I come to the first organizing meeting? Well, I said yes, I did. And among those who were there to organize this were members who headed NGOs at the UN, and had they not been there, there wouldn't be one of the intentions, which is to bring circles, these kinds of circles, to the United Nations and UN NGOs. And that's why I found myself at the UN. And that is when I learned that there were, after Beijing in 1995, the fourth Women's World Conference, that there wouldn't be a fifth one. In fact, there were no plans for there ever to be one. And here we are in the 21st century, and where we have all these means to connect and stay connected like the Internet provides, and I could truly understand how women inspire each other, see each other as role models, and at a international level, that how such a conference would just energize a global women's conference, a global women's movement, mm-hmm. at a time when we are in the sort of tipping point where we could go either way. Things are getting better and worse at the same time. Certain things are evolving. Certain things are definitely devolving. And women are the key to making a change toward saving the planet. I simplify it by saying if women had the power to make decisions equal to the men, so that male and female would be involved and making the decisions that affect us all. Women as a whole, not all women, but women as a whole, would want for the children of the world what we want for our own children. Mm-hmm. So I call it Mother's Agenda. And certainly it would start with freedom from violence, which means freedom from war. It would start with wanting all the kids in the world to grow up feeling safe and feeling fed and having access to education and health and play, you know? You can't play in a war zone. So it's a very simple idea, but it actually would make a huge difference. And it's embodied in a lot of statements from the UN. Not in this quite simple language, but it says the same thing, that women need to be involved or the world isn't going to get better, essentially.
Can you had talked about why the Millionth Circle idea, how you envisioned the power of the million circles. Can you describe that, why we want to encourage women to form their own circles?
Several reasons. One is because you are in a circle that supports you to do whatever it is that matters to you. We support one another. The women who would want to join a circle have an Artemis archetype somewhere in them because it's a sister archetype. Mm-hmm. Not all women like to hang out with women. We're not all archetypally the same, but a woman who has a sense of trust in other women has a sister archetype. So she'll meet with others and share their and learn to trust and tell the story and be witnessed and be encouraged to do whatever it is. And the Myriad Circle is a metaphor, a metaphoric number. It's like the 100th monkey, the story that got anti-nuclear activists willing to look ridiculous, but knowing that underneath is the premise of the 100th monkey or the Myriad Circle, which is about critical mass and tipping point. The whole notion is that we share an archetypal level or a morphic field level, and when a critical number of this species, human being species, changes something about how we perceive and act, then this human culture changes. So the Myriad Circle is that circle formed by ordinary women that when it comes into being reaches a tipping point, and suddenly the world changes for us, as it did through consciousness raising in the 1970s. It really, really did affect a great many things that we just take for granted. And recently we watched what tipping point and critical mass means when suddenly, or so it seems suddenly, same-sex marriage became something to have. And to be against it was a problem, when before it was just not to be thought about, except that people did push for equality. And when it happened suddenly. And that's what critical mass means. That's what tipping point means. That's what the millionth circle is, that circle of women who, when it forms, creates critical mass and tipping point.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to the wise words of Dr. Jean Schnodebolin. And we're talking about the many ways that the archetypes, the gods and goddesses, play out in our lives and our psyches today. And we're also talking about this tangible idea that if we can come together collectively, men and women, but we're kind of talking about women's energy, we can have the power to change the world. And I think it was the Dalai Lama that you quoted that had said, the world will be saved by Western women. Because Western women have the education and the opportunities and the intelligence to come together and make these things happen. And your activism right now is about bringing this Fifth World Conference on Women to light, because there are issues all around the planet for women that if we were able to come together and join together and stand in solidarity, we could change the future of the planet through empowering and bettering the lives of women. Am I saying that correctly?
Right. It could happen if we then stayed. It works in such a way in which we influence each other, we inspire each other, we get appalled by what's happening to people like us who are the women people, and we get involved in making changes that ripple out. And yes, so a global conference on women would inspire the millennial generation. Now, one of the things I really would love to happen in what is essentially a women's leaderless movement is that if there are any women out there who went to the fourth conference in Beijing in 1995, 20 years ago, you have daughters, you have granddaughters, you saw the power of it on you. Can you bring together the alums that you know? Can you influence the UN? The UN right now is thinking that civil society, that is us, that women don't want it because they haven't heard from us. They've just heard from some NGOs in New York who have been against it. And what I learned when I was there was that we need to let them know that the women of the world really do want it. And the women in the West need to be influenced. For all that the Dalai Lama said, the women in the West need to be influenced by the women from third world countries who are amazing in what they have put up with, struggled through, suffered through, and what they are able to do. It is like a big consciousness-raising possibility where we influence one another to be who we could be collectively and individually. So yes, there is something about that, and there's a great hope that I have that it will happen in India in 3 years, because it takes 3 years from the time the General Assembly approves it. And we have there's a new government in India and a new prime minister who, in his Independence Day speech, spoke about stopping violence against women. He noted that it isn't nature that means that there are, say, 1,000 baby boys born each to 914 or 940 girls, but they're selective. There's a select out that equals what some people call femicide. I do see a relationship, and a relationship between the sister archetype and protection of the vulnerable and activism, because there's a natural activism of in a social justice side. The little girl at 3 who says it's not fair is an Artemis, you know.
In the book, you did a great job of telling the stories of Atalanta, if I'm saying that correctly, and Artemis, and bringing these goddesses to light, and then intertwining them with modern day stories of modern day heroes, women who have taken on heroic assignments that they didn't know they were going to take on, and changing their own lives. And one of the things that I notice is, being someone who has been kind of the grounded earth mother for a long time, that how does most of the stories are of women who didn't have children, or, you know, weren't already kind of engaged in their marriage or their home life. They are able to have the freedom to kind of go off on these individual journeys. How does someone who's already made commitments, right, is in a Hera life or a life of being a mom, still hear their own voice or assignment within that? I don't know if I'm making sense, but you know what I'm saying? How do those things go together? How can you still hear your personal voice when you have commitments and responsibilities to your home and to your work and to your husband and to your life in general?
Well, one of the models for who we are is like a committee, that if you have a well-functioning ego chairing the committee, all of the other archetypes could be seen sitting around the committee. And the capacity to recognize that there are other energies other than the dominant ones, and that at a certain point, it's like the dominant ones have used up the psychic energy that was part of who they were at that phase of their lives. And then maybe it's the second half of life, maybe it's the last third of life. Maybe it's that feeling that I'm losing juice. Life has lost something. And besides, I'm getting all these aches and pains that are sort of psychosomatic. They're not exactly psychosomatic, but there are ways in which the body expresses that which is not being lived out by the psyche and the mind. Mm-hmm. And so there's a paying attention to the dreams that come up that say also that you're not happy with the situation as it is, and how to then develop, and what you are drawn to and who you are drawn to does come up, and these are transition zones. And the other thing is that nothing stays the same. The great wisdom of life is that everything changes. A mantra is anything can change any time. That to be grateful and have gratitude for what is when it's going really well, because you know it will also change. And when you're in the midst of the dumps, to know that you're in the underworld, but you're not going to be here forever because it's going to change too. I mean, it's a capacity to flow with and not be afraid of saying, acknowledging that there's something that wants to grow and may disrupt things a bit in the transition, because people don't like others to change often.
No, we don't like change in general.
to bring up something, because we've had such a good time moving through this topic, that I never did say anything about indomitable, which is a key word in the title.
Yes,
Artemis,
absolutely.
The indomitable spirit in every woman. Indomitable means untamed and unsubdued. And with this archetype, no matter what has befallen you, no matter if you were raped, there is a part of you that is connected with the archetype of Artemis that is indomitable, untamed, unsubdued. You are, for example, a raped non-victim. Yes, it happened to you. Yes, whatever bad thing. Everybody suffers, actually, and bad things happen to us all. But what stays still? What spirit remains? And when I see women at the UN who were abducted into brothels and trafficked, now working through NGOs to rescue girls so that from them, it's like, okay, that is an Artemis. The ability to pick yourself up and go out into life with some optimism, that is an Artemis energy. And I send out an e-blast or a newsletter infrequently, but when I do, and I tell what I'm up to, I write at the bottom with love, hope, perseverance, and optimism. I call it my activist mantra, but I could also say that this is an Artemis activist, because the capacity to persevere, that's that same target, aim for it, go for it, do what it takes to get there, that focus, which is an innate gift of Artemis, is the perseverance and the optimism that says you can, is part of the archetype too. But the other part of the archetype is the moon aspect. And the moon aspect is about beauty, seen in nature, how there is, by moonlight, everything is related. There's a oneness. There's a mysticism to the beauty of the planet. It's a nature spiritualism that is the sense of really taking in what a beautiful planet we live on, are part of, and are moved by what we love to be the activists we are. That's so Artemis. And so I'm thinking of that this whole, I mean, and the book comes from the sense of appreciating that there are so many women who actually did not have the greatest childhood, who in many ways raised themselves. And the ones that raised themselves by going out to nature or to the animals and learned how to love anyway and learned how to trust anyway and are out there making a difference, these are the natural Artemis elements. I also talk about late-blooming Artemises. I mean, you asked about what about the woman who has been happily married, raising children, totally involved in the traditional role of wife and mother, and fulfilled through those being her archetypes. Well, when the roles become, when the archetype becomes lived out, there is often a period of transition when other archetypes start to stir. And this is when the woman who didn't have it opportunity to go on after college for a doctorate does, because she got an Athena mind and she's not been using it very much, and she's fascinated now to grow into that direction. And the activist of any kind also at that point may do so. So I mean, I see a lot of women who have had traditional lives and have in their reading read about the kind of woman that they would then grow into when they had an opportunity to. So what did you read? What inspired you when you had one life to imagine yourself living another life? Imagination always comes before one moves into it. I mean, your imagination had to be stirred, beginning with goddesses and every woman, but it had to be stirred by other things that would make you then take it, the steps you did, to go on to graduate school, to become involved as you have. I mean, you're living out activist role by being in the world as you are. Elizabeth, you are.
It's like
you are being Artemis.
Well, and that's That's why I'm so drawn and was so excited to have you here, because the phone calls I get and from my circle of women, you know, there is this growing edge for so many of us of what is next. How does the next piece look? And the most powerful image from Artemis for me that really helped in this change that I'm going through was the mother bear image that you brought up earlier. But the part that really stood out for me is for all of my sisters out there who have been devoted to raising children and being, you know, wives and mothers. It's just how I always introduce myself. Was that at the point the mother bear, you know, takes care of her young so fiercely. But then there comes a point where she sends the baby bear up into the tree, which she's taught them to do to forage for themselves, and then she leaves. And then it's time for the young baby bear to fend for themselves, and the mother bear leaves. And that image is what's going to carry me for the next year as my youngest is up in her tree at college. And yes. I want to thank you for that image, because that's the kind of thing that all of the ancient mythology and the goddesses and every woman and Artemis has spoken to me. And I think it's going to speak to many women. And as we come to the end of our hour, Jean Schnodeboehlen, I want to thank you for sharing your wisdom with me all these years and to our audience today. I want to encourage men and women to look into the idea of circles, to create and form a circle of consciousness raising, to share your thoughts and ideas, because it's in these groups, in these communities, that we find our voice, that we find our inspirations, that we find our ability to grow. So look for Jean's books, The Millionth Circle, her latest book, Artemis, The Indomitable Spirit in Every Woman. It is a beautiful read. It is going to inspire you in many directions. And go to Jean's website, jeanboehlen.com, to find out more about her work and also her push for the UN-sponsored Fifth World Conference on Women. Jean, any final thoughts?
No, this has been very enjoyable to just sort of circle around the meaning of this particular archetype and the meaning of our lives, really. I mean, that's really the subject of all the books that I've written. It's about meaning. It's about how, when you find meaning through the choices you've made, it's consciousness, it's choice, it's then living the life you were meant to live with all of its ups and downs, but feeling like you are getting to be yourself. And what a privilege it is. I'm saying that we are a generation in the first world, in the United States, where some of us are privileged to live as no other generation of women ever has in the whole world.
Thank you, Jean Schnodeboehlen. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Thank you for supporting KCBX Radio.